Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from The James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
This podcast was recorded Thursday, June 18th at 10:28 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like the algae in the Lincoln Memorial reflecting pool will disappear. Let's talk politics. Coming up in the podcast, the GOAT of the Snollygoster of the Week Awards. And I don't mean the greatest of all time. But first, Governor DeWine has come out against Ohio's death penalty. This week, the conservative Republican governor, who co-sponsored the bill that reinstated capital punishment in the early 1980s, now says Ohio should abolish it. His reason for saying Ohio should stop executing people is the death penalty is not a deterrent because it takes too long to put a condemned person to death.
Even if they're caught, let's start first they got to get caught, then they're indicted, then they're convicted, then a death sentence is handed down. Even after all that, their odds of actually being executed are not very high.
The governor says his decision was based on data, data he put on full display during a PowerPoint presentation during his press conference. When asked if he now morally opposed the death penalty, he was unclear. When asked if he would consider commuting the sentences of some or all of the 109 people now on Ohio's death row, he declined to answer. He did call on state lawmakers to abolish the death penalty or at least put it on the ballot for voters to decide. That seems unlikely. Some Republican leaders blame DeWine for not allowing a single execution since he took office in 2019. DeWine says that's because drug companies have denied the state access to lethal injection drugs. Anyway, regardless of the timing, regardless of the reasons why or where the debate goes from here, it was a pretty remarkable decision for a former prosecutor, former state attorney general, former and perhaps still tough-on-crime politician to say the government of Ohio should no longer put people to death. Joining us now to discuss the governor's statement is the executive director of the group Ohioans to Stop Executions, Kevin Werner. Kevin Werner, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
Your group has led the fight in Ohio against capital punishment for 38 years. How big a deal is it for a sitting Republican governor to come out against the death penalty?
Well, certainly in Ohio, that has not occurred, at least not in the modern era. I think that maybe way back when, I think Governor DeSalle may have made some remarks on the topic, but here under the current law, we've not seen this. I mean, typically what has happened is after being in office, Republican and Democratic governors have both expressed they wish they would have done more on the issue of the death penalty. I think that those remarks have typically been around exercising executive powers. But here we are with Governor DeWine, a sitting Republican governor, who has really laid out a pretty clear, data-driven, here's why I've changed my mind on this issue. So it's not ever happened.
Mm. Have you talked to the governor yourself? Did he reach out to you?
No. We had a long ago conversation when he was attorney general, personally talking about death penalty task force reforms at that time. And that was, gosh, back in 2014, somewhere in that time frame. So, I think Governor DeWine has really clearly been sitting with this and been thinking about this for a long time. I mean, he's, nearly 50 years of experience dealing with this issue in some way, shape, or form. And so I think that he's, had lots of time and a look at this issue to develop a pretty clear understanding as to what the system actually does.
Why did it take him so long? He mentioned the deterrence. He says there's no evidence that it deters crime. That's not new. Your group has published studies. Groups all around the country have published studies for years, if not decades, showing that because it takes so long and because murder is often a crime of passion, that the death penalty is, data shows, it's not a deterrent. But it sounded like in his statement that he was just realizing this.
Well, I mean, I think that for sure there are folks on both sides of the issues that have used deterrence to kind of move them one way or the other. And it is absolutely fact, yes, that the studies that have been done show that there's no real deterrent effect. They show that states that retain the death penalty have higher violent crime rates than those that do not. But it is a line, it is an argument that we often hear from prosecutors. And I think that's a little bit of Mike DeWine sort of showing his prosecutorial background in that sort of position, or sort of up until now saying, yeah, it may be a deterrent, it may be a deterrent. I think that you have to look really closely at the system and understand all of the data points and really kind of be honest about what's the actual impact and the role. To this day, we still hear opponents of ending the death penalty say that it deters crime when we absolutely know it does not. So, you know, it seems to be a convenient talking point that the death penalty is needed to deter the worst crimes or to deter certain crimes, when the fact of the matter is it doesn't.
Do they have a point, though, that yeah. It does take too long and it doesn't have to take that long? I mean, let's look at the case of Timothy McVeigh, the Oklahoma City bombing. He carried out his crime in 1995. He was convicted 2 years later in 1997, and he was executed in 2001. 6 years from crime to execution. If every death penalty case moved like that, would capital punishment be more of a deterrent?
Well, no, it would not be more of a deterrent. It can't be more of a, it can't, it's just not a deterrent, you know, period. But I think that, you know, the Oklahoma City bombing example is a little bit of an outlier. You know, number one, it's a federal case. Mm-hmm. It's a very different process than what the state courts have. The second thing is, you know, some folks would feel that way, that it's possible that there's a if these executions happened a little faster, maybe that would be a way to have some usefulness. But then here's the problem with that. When we look at all of those cases, and I'm not saying Timothy McVeigh was wrongfully convicted, but I'm saying that when we look at those instances of wrongful convictions, it's usually 10, 12, 15, 18 years after the person's convicted that the evidence of their innocence starts to come to light. So the faster you try to make this system work, the more likely you are to execute innocent people. And I think no matter where a person is on the death penalty, we all agree we shouldn't be executing innocent people.
Yeah, your group has points to the stat that says for every five people executed, one person has been exonerated. Yeah. The governor did not mention that in his statement. He was laser focused on deterrence and the lack of deterrence. He didn't mention anything about there's a chance we could execute an innocent person, which Ohio has exonerated folks on death row over the years.
Yeah, you know, I think you know, in retrospect about that announcement and about what he articulated, it seems to me that part of his rationale was probably that when I voted for this law in 1981, I thought it was going to be a deterrent. That's what I think most folks in favor of the death penalty thought at that time. We didn't have, you know, 46 years of data that showed that, no, it actually doesn't deter crime. So I think that if that was his rationale for, you know, a life-saving, a life-protecting measure that would hold, you know, violent and dangerous criminals, people accountable, then that makes sense. I think what he's come to the realization, as many, and certainly I think the majority of Ohioans are already here, the death penalty doesn't work. And I think what he was doing really is saying, what I thought back then is not what I think today. And if I hung my hat on, I could be okay with the system because it's going to deter violent crime, then we know that today that it doesn't. And so I think that's really why he didn't go into those other areas that maybe, you know, he certainly could have. You know, he talked a little bit about the costs, not really as much as to, you know, sort of the wasted resources and the allocations that really could be going to serving victim family members. So that was a little surprising to me that he didn't lean on the costs.
Yeah.
But certainly from a human impact, you know, he's talking about the impact on victims and how long that takes. And he's talking about the impact on correction staff who have to actually carry out this system. And so, and then of course, you know, landing on the, it just, and it doesn't work. It doesn't deter crime. And so,
you could hear his, I think you meant, you've been mentioned, I think correctly. He sounded like a prosecutor up there, and his job for as a county prosecutor way back, and then attorney general was to, you know, prosecute crimes. And if this doesn't help prosecute crimes, then what's the point? Basically, is what he is saying. To the politics of this, the Republican legislature has been basically ignoring the governor since COVID. At times, legislative leaders from his own party have been openly hostile to Governor DeWine. With 200 odd days left in his term, do you have any hope that lawmakers will act on this?
Well, I hold out hope that lawmakers will act on this. I think what's going to be required first is that they're going to have to take a good, honest, hard look at the data and at the system that we have today. You know, when I hear things like the governor's not carrying out his duties under the Constitution, it's sort of like makes me think that these are individuals that just don't get it and just don't understand. So if you looked at like the drug issue, for example, governor says he's not going to jeopardize the, you know, needs of Ohioans across the state to get access to the medications they need just to carry out one execution. Yes, that was absolutely the case, still is. But there was an underlying issue before that even occurred, and that was that a federal court said Ohio's death penalty protocol, the drugs that it used back in 2018, 2019, and the drugs that it would use today if lawmakers had their way and just get the drugs somehow, that protocol is unconstitutional because a federal court found that it suffocated individuals to death and that it used the term waterboarding and that it was torturing prisoners who were being executed. And so that violates the U.S. and the Ohio Constitution. So for somebody to say he's ignoring the Constitution, I would say, well, actually, no, he's not. He understands and he has said, we're not going to torture people while I'm governor. That sort of evolved later to now they understand that the access to the drugs is a problem. You know, I don't know what these lawmakers think they're going to do who, you know, their quick fix being nitrogen gas. Well, last week, the 11th Circuit, which is a pretty conservative circuit, just ruled Alabama's nitrogen gas unconstitutional. So, like, I really don't know what, you know, we've been at this for 46 years. We've had 46 years of a death penalty law that today we understand doesn't work. And so if these legislators who have held out, who I think it's a very small minority of legislators who are holding out and saying that we need to keep this system, if they take a good hard look, an honest look, and understand the impacts of the system and how much it costs and sort of the futility of it, they'll come to the conclusion that we should repeal the death penalty.
Looking at the statements of lawmakers, folks running for office in this current election, the new attorney general who Governor DeWine just appointed, Andy Wilson, a longtime prosecutor, said he supports the death penalty. He says in a small percentage of cases, the death penalty is the only option to bring a measure of justice to victims' families. Should it, for the worst of the worst, I hate to use that term, but for the most extreme cases, shouldn't the death penalty remain on the books as an option for the most heinous crimes?
Yeah. So the problem with that is, number one, the example of, you know, Attorney General's statements being, you know, we should only use this in a handful of cases. We should be really careful. We're really, really, you know, just for these worst of worst cases. That is not what the body of evidence shows us. How do you have 3,500 capital indictments that net you 335 or 340 death sentences, most of which were going to get overturned later. So what we actually see is that prosecutors, maybe not as much anymore today, but certainly over the 46 years of this law, have used the death penalty system in order to try to induce plea deals. Mm-hmm. In Cuyahoga County in particular, Franklin County maybe not as bad, but the MO was indict them all and let the courts sort it out. So when that's the posture that you take, you're going to wind up with cases that make zero sense as to why is this person on death row? How did we happen to get an innocent person caught up in this? How is it that we, you know, that this train has gotten so far off the tracks? So the idea of worst of the worst is not really, I mean, if you ask any victim family member, what was it for you? Was this murder of your loved one worst of the worst? Or was it sort of not as bad? Was it a garden variety? Or was it more like,
yeah,
you know, it's the worst for them. And so what you do, not you, Mike, but what our society has done is we have created this almost like stratification of victims. And so some victims get access to lots of services because prosecutors say, oh, we're going to seek the death penalty in this case. Or if they're cooperative, then they get access to you know, all kinds of resources, and we can help you with your statement. We can help you. But like, to a victim's family member, any murder is the worst of the worst. And so we shouldn't be trying to separate out by degree, because at the end of the day, every single capital conviction, prosecutors have said, this is the worst of the worst. And in many instances, they're talking about people who didn't commit the crime. They're talking about individuals where, you know, the facts and the circumstances were not understood at the time. We're talking about, you know, moments when police or prosecutors sat on DNA test results that show the person didn't do it. So the bottom line, I think, is that this system is run by people who make mistakes, not always intentionally, but that happens. And so you can't say, well, we should have it just for these special few and select cases, because the data shows us that is not how our prosecutors in our state have used this system.
Now, you are pushing, your group is pushing for people to sign a petition asking Governor DeWine to commute the death sentences of the folks now on death row to life without parole. The governor can still do that. He has, you know, 200 some odd days left in his term. He has the constitutional ability to do that. Do you think he will?
You know, I'm not really sure what Governor DeWine is going to do, although I respect and understand his, when he made his announcement and he said, I'm not here to talk about clemency today. Like, I think that was really an important to keep the focus on the lack of deterrence and the impact on victims and the impact on law enforcement. I would imagine that, you know, every governor that's left office has said that they wish they would have done more on clemency. I hope that Governor DeWine doesn't have that feeling when he leaves office. I think that it seems likely that he may be exercising some of his powers there. There may be cases that they're looking at. But I think that, you know, that is for the governor to determine in his own time. But I'll tell you one thing, Mike, whoever the next governor is, there are 29 executions that are scheduled today for day two of the next administration. And they go all the way until the end of 2029. So this is not an issue that seems to be going away as Governor DeWine's term ends. I mean, if he exercises clemency, he's certainly well within his constitutional authority to do that. But, you know, time will tell. I think what we have to remember is that Governor DeWine has probably, I mean, I'm pretty certainly, more experience with the death penalty than any other governor that Ohio has had, certainly since, you know, 1981. Mm-hmm. And so I think that he probably has clear eyes about what this system is, what it represents, the individual families, the victim families that get caught up in this and just get sort of dragged through the ringer for decades. So, yeah, I mean, I think he probably is thinking about executive clemency, but I certainly don't have a sense as to, you know, which cases and how many and any of that. I mean, that's for him to determine, and I'm sure he'll do that in time, and you know, he'll follow the process and all of that. But
it would be pretty bold, and I know that the governor is talking about leaving a legacy, and if he were to do that, that would be his legacy. You know, he can talk improving reading and, you know, wraparound services for, you know, children. But if he were to do that, that would be his legacy, and whether or not he wants that to be basically his marker at the end of his term, we'll see. Kevin Warner, Executive Director of Ohioans to Stop Executions, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mike. It was a pleasure to be with you.
Take care. We'll be right back.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.
Welcome back to Snollygoster. Coming up, our Snollygoster of the Week segment. But first, we want to ask you a favor. You know, if you like what you hear, one way to help us boost audience and to let more and more people know about this podcast is to share it. Share it on social media, share it on Reddit, you know, heck, write it on bathroom walls. Just let people know about Snollygoster if you like what you're hearing, and that'll help help boost our audience and let more people know about us. All right, it's time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. And this week it goes to union workers for the city of Columbus. They have filed a grievance against the city for subcontracting some of their work to non-union beings. These workers clear brush and vegetation at a wastewater treatment plant in Columbus. Well, the city contracted with a firm that will have non-union workers clearing that brush. The non-union workers don't even get paid. At least they don't get paid in cash. These workers are goats. These are goats that clear the brush. The union says hiring the goats violates their collective bargaining agreement. The company that provides the goats say they get to areas that are tough for humans to get to. You know, those steep hills, really thick brush, places where it's dangerous to operate machinery or, you know, whatever they use to clear brush. You know, axes, you know, sickles. Is that what they use, sickles? Anyway, the goats. Have you seen these goats? I've seen them on bike trails. They're pretty cute. Anyway, I don't have a goat in this fight, but it is a pretty shrewd move for the union to pick on goats for just being goats. For that, Local 1632 of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, it gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. I just thought of this. I wonder if goats could help with the algae at the Lincoln Memorial Reflecting Pool. Maybe they're thirsty. Do goats drink algae water? Who knows? Give it a shot. It has to work as well as the hydrogen peroxide they've been putting in there one jug at a time. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.